Hey, what's going on, podcast fam? So Wilson here. Before we get started with this episode, just wanted to drop you all a real quick editor's note that if you listen to this episode now and then, say listen to it about 2 weeks from now, you're going to hear it a remastered version. So we're dropping the unmastered, kind of unedited version without music underlay just to keep a solid timeline for our Rico and Sueño season, our musical stylings, you know what I'm saying, our musical genius, Deviant Sounds, got into a bit of accident, got hurt, so you know, he's on the mends, and we wanted to make sure that we gave him time to rest up and heal up, and then get us, you know, that dope content that he always gets us. But yep, so enjoy this unedited, unmastered version. And then check back in a few weeks for the remastered version. All right.
From an anthropological standpoint, and you talk about societies and contact, what does that do for your perspective of your Puerto Rican identity, having that mix of Taino blood and African blood and Spaniard blood? And like, you are an example of human contact.
Yes, but I would actually even go to more recently. It is no secret that Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. So this is a piece of history that is often overlooked.
The thing that surprises me the most about Puerto Rico whenever I go there is just how much of North American culture has crept into the traditional historical culture of puertorriqueños from the island. You see it everywhere. It's not just the very first time I went 12 years after I left, I was really stunned by the signage, let's say, you know, and that there was just a lot of words in English. And I'm going like, why? You know, it's like there are words in Spanish for that. Why are they in English? It was, I didn't get it. And it was disappointing to me that that happened.
What is up, listeners? So, last episode, we ended on the idea of identity being ridiculously complicated. So today, we're going to explore that a little bit more.
If you caught the mini-sode or read our book recommendation, War Against All Puerto Ricans, before, then you probably learned that Puerto Rico is a colony of these United States.
And one of the strongest indicators of colonization is the imposition of language from the colonizers onto the colonized.
So, since the island was first colonized by the Spanish, the language of the island became Espanol. However, they've got words from Taino culture that survived by hiding in Puerto Rican Spanish, and customs that survived African trafficking, like the Yoruba translation to Santeria. But Spanish pretty firmly has its place in Puerto Rico.
In 1898, the Treaty of Paris was signed, and PR became a U.S. territory. And after having language stripped away from them once, the people of Borriquén were determined not to let that happen again.
Since the annexation, U.S. culture has influenced the culture on the island of Borriquén. To survive under the current structure, Puerto Rico had to become, in essence, more U.S.-like. But Puerto Rico has persisted and continues to preserve Spanish in what Alexander Roman likes to call the language wars.
Power.
Tú.
I'm Wilson.
Soy Lu.
And this is The Power of You in Fiction, Episode 3, Language Wars.
In 1897, the Spanish government agreed to grant Puerto Rico limited self-governments as an overseas province of Spain. After decades of fighting, the Puerto Rico independence movement finally made some noticeable strides forward.
However, that victory was short-lived once the U.S. invaded PR during the Spanish-American War, and set up outposts throughout the island during the 1890s. And just 1 year after gaining autonomy, Puerto Rico was annexed by the U.S. as a part of the Treaty of Paris.
The English language was seen as the key to civilizing the people and making them understand the concepts of democracy. English as a medium of instruction was intended to make Puerto Ricans loyal to the U.S. interests and ideologies, with Spanish vernacular being dismissed as patois.
Well, in 1900, with this whole civilizing idea, the U.S. established the Foraker Act, which installed a civil administration along with a governor and commissioner of education. with the express purpose of advancing the U.S. language, English, and doubly focused on implanting U.S. teaching practices, holidays, and cultural values in the PR natives.
Then came the 1902 Official Languages Act, which made Spanish and English the co-official languages of Puerto Rico.
After that, we had the Jones Act, passing in 1917, which stated Spanish would become the language of instruction in grades 1 through 8, and then English for grades 9 through 12.
And in 1934, they tweaked that. They taught in Spanish until second grade and English in grades 3 through 8, with English as the official language of instruction with mandatory Spanish classes.
But wait, there's more. In 45, Puerto Rican legislature made Spanish the official language of the island. But President Truman vetoed that joint, came through with that Mutombo energy.
And it didn't stop there. Because in 49, under Governor Luis Munoz Marin, Spanish became the medium of instruction at all levels with mandatory English classes.
English still permeated the culture, though. Because as we learned from Esmeralda Santiago, when she returned to PR in the 70s, she saw English signs and markers throughout the island for the first time.
And this is still a back and forth, because in 1991, the Official Languages Act was revoked and Spanish was declared the sole official language of Puerto Rico.
But they reneged on that joint in 1993. Surprise, surprise. And the act was reinstated, making Spanish and English co-official again. Y'all confused yet or tired? Because, damn, I know I'm getting there.
Yeah, but now it appears the resistance to the Official Language Act is still strong, despite the fact that we all tired. Because based on the 2000 census, about 71.9% of the people in Puerto Rico spoke English less than very well. It also found that 85.6% spoke a language other than English at home. That's Spanish, y'all.
All right. So the last big move for now in this battle came in 2012. When pro-U.S. statehood governor Luis Fortuno proposed that all courses in Puerto Rican public schools be taught in English instead of Spanish, which I think is the wildest thing ever, but whatever. They're currently in the midst of a 10-year plan to make it happen with widespread resistance from the people. So this is all far from over, y'all.
The Puerto Rican people do not deny the value of being bilingual, but they are also keenly aware of the history of the culture and the importance of language within the fight to preserve this.
In fact, Alexandra Roman's family has been into politics for generations, and she has two children of her own who differ in how they relate to Spanish and English. So she understands this perspective really, really well.
Actually, what people don't know is that we have a language war, maybe. Let's just call it like that. Because depending on the political party that's on power, a few decades ago, they like to change the official language of the country, either to Spanish only or English and Spanish. Right now, our official languages are Spanish and English. We teach English since kindergarten until 12th grade and also in college. It's a must, like Spanish. It's a natural thing. I learned English by watching cable TV and and in public school. I developed it a little bit more when I got together with my husband, because his family have lived here and have lived in the United States, and they are fully bilingual. When my daughter was born, she picked up the English faster than Spanish. So she understood both. We call it Spanish because we stop talking Spanish and then end up talking English, and we mix it and right in the middle of the sentence, and we go like that very fast, like she talks. And that's how she absorbed the two languages. And it was easy for her. But since she got the English first, she prefers reading in English, even though she's also good reading in Spanish. The plan with the kid was to start him with Spanish so he didn't get confused, because my daughter got a little bit confused at the beginning. So the plan was that, but
since he was always behind her as her shadow, the plan did not work. So he picked up both at the same time, which is a blessing because it helped them a lot in school and in life. So when we go to the United States, he understands and it's easy for him. He doesn't have to feel as an outsider or neither of them because they understand the language. And it's important, to learn more than one language. I think it's awesome of a person who knows more languages. It gives them not an advantage, but a way of looking through another culture. And because language is part of the identity of someone else. So in Puerto Rico, we have like two official languages. That's how it became part of our family.
So today, we're going to view the language wars through the eyes of two Boricua artists in their 20s who sort of fall on opposite sides of the language experience.
Now, without further ado, we'll introduce our characters for today's showcase. The first, like Lou and I, is a child of a language teacher and loves learning about languages.
So my name is Sara Ramos Sepulveda. I am a comic book artist. And what I like to do as a hobby is like reading webcomics and learning languages, like learning things about languages, not exactly learning them.
The other majored in foreign languages and art history at university.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Flores Montanes. I go by Yaza Femme on social media. And I love coffee, chocolate, and dogs.
Can you guess which one embraced multilingualism early on and which is a late bloomer?
Take a second. Think about it. What tips you off? How might this affect their artwork? Write down your guesses and you'll find out if you're right right after this break.
Yo, what up, listeners? Lou here. We have a word from longtime friend of the show, Jerome Walford, who is also the founder of Forward Comics. We love Jerome. His comic Nowhere Man is one of my favorite comics. Jerome is sort of an everyman. In addition to owning his own comics line, he's put out Nowhere Man, where he has written, lettered, penciled, inked, colored, and put into production the entire book. There's 3 volumes of this thing.
Facts. He's a badass with it. He also has the Guan Anthology. The first volume is out and it's been received with wild, wild, wild acclaim. When he's not doing all the things that Lou just did, he does that Guan Anthology and he gives other artists a chance to shine. You know what I'm saying? Under the Ford Comics banner. We love the Guan Anthology. I got it. Gave it as a gift to my little sister. She loved it. Lou got it. He loved it. So shout out to him for that one. It's about the migrant experience. And also in the anthology, Jerome has a story and talks about his immigrant experience since he's Jamaican. Like me, shout out. Burr, 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 burr. That's the homie, but let me stop.
So he's dropping the Guan Anthology Volume 2. And, in terms of Jamaican heritage, the title Guan comes from the phrase Wagwan, Wataguan, what's going on? And he's about to tell you what's going on with the immigrant experience, with a particular focus in Volume 2 on the refugee experience. So we actually got Jerome to spit a couple of words about Guan Volume 2, which has a Kickstarter up.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jerome Walford. I'm a writer, artist, and lead at Forward Comics. Today, I want to tell you a little bit about our newest project, Guan Anthology Volume 2. The Guan Anthology Project is an international collection that centers around the immigrant experience. What makes it cool is that we often transform these experiences into fantastical stories. The theme explores what it feels like to be an immigrant, refugee, or foreigner in a new world, yet attempting to hold on to a sense of home, family, and heritage. This is addressed, directly or indirectly, through lighthearted or thought-provoking short stories, prose, and single-image entries, spanning nearly every genre. For Volume 2, we have some highly accomplished artists, including Eisner Award winner John Jennings. We also have Eric Wilkerson, who has recently done work for Shuri for Scholastic. But we also have some amazing emerging talent, comic creators from around the world with some riveting work. Please check out the campaign on Kickstarter today and order your copy of Guan Anthology Volume 2. Explore with us these stories about the journey for a place to call home.
Figure it out yet? Need a hint? Well, one of our guests goes by Quinto Martes, and this dope name origin has an insight to their relationship with language.
The Quinto Martes means fifth Tuesday. In my family, we are five children and there's five work days. So from Monday to Friday, that's us, basically. That's what the idea, like, I'm the second child, so I'm Tuesday. Saturday and Sunday are my parents. That was the idea. And like about the fifth Tuesday, the idea was that there's not always a fifth Tuesday or Monday or Friday on the month. It's a thing that's like special. It's randomly. It's like my art. Something like that. That was the idea. And actually, if you also in Martes, if you take down the M from the Tuesday, basically, if you take the M, it says artes in Spanish, like arts. So it's like, oh my goodness, blow mine. Many uses for this name.
Yeah, I think you might have given it away, but the name is dope AF, so I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I like when there's thought and intentionality behind these things.
Big facts, homie. The fact that her parents are the weekends, so she considers her parents to be fun or chill, and then her and her siblings are the work days, which, you know what I'm saying, raising kids is work, but then like, Martes without the M, like she said, means artes, which is art in Spanish. I'm just like, yo, layers in this joint. We have so many layers. And then the whole like fifth Tuesday, there's not always a fifth. I was like, yo, man. Yeah. Go ahead, Sara. Go ahead.
Right. Names like an ogre and an onion. But when you said language teacher, both our moms teach literacy and the language of instruction in these United States. So English.
Good connection, yo. Because Satter's father, being a Spanish teacher, means he's doing what our moms did, but in Spanish.
This, combined with her mother's interest in music, put an emphasis on Spanish in their household in a big way. Meaning, Satter's the one who got into English late.
I never went outside of Puerto Rico before. All the English that I know was from classes and from learning from movies. And songs, basically. That's how I learned English. And if there was a song, I take the lyrics and read the song with the lyrics at the same time. And that was like later on, like when I was in high school, because when I was in elementary school and they were teaching us English, I was like, I don't care. I don't need English for anything. Why are you teaching me this? And when I started like really learning English was did learn stuff of English. But in high school was when I started like taking the time to read the lyrics and listen to the song so I could like think about the pronunciations. And when there was movies, instead of watching the movies with subtitles in Spanish, I would watch the movies with subtitles in English so I could see the pronunciation and the everything at the same time. And if I couldn't understand something, I would search in the dictionary or change the setting to Spanish again and reverse it so I can see what exactly the sentence meant. When I was a kid, mostly fairy tales, like Disney movies, basically. I used to read about many things. I can't remember everything that I read. My dad, like, he's a Spanish teacher, so he was like, hey, you should be reading, and suggested things for us to read. So I was always reading. If I don't remember much, only Enid Blyton. There was, like, a writer for children that mystery books and... there was a series. That's why I can remember because there were so many. Harry Potter, obviously. I read many things. And my mom liked to like sing and she had she could have teach music, but because she studied it, but she wasn't, she never taught it, but she was also music. And my dad likes to write. So it's like there's creativity and stuff about like languages and everything around the house. So it's kind of cool that now that I think about it.
And if Sarah is our late bloomer, that must make our multilingual guest, Jasmine.
Because I'm from Puerto Rico. They teach here English since you're like little. I learned kind of Spanish and English at the same time. I mean, my first language is Spanish. In high school, no, middle school, I think it was. Yeah. I started to learn French and then I continued to study it. In Savannah, I did have friends that talked to me in Spanish and stuff, but it's not the same because, you know, we have like Spanglish. And then we have like that Puerto Rican slang. It's just kind of like, it's just home and it's just part of the culture and stuff. And you don't really, I guess, notice it or appreciate it as much until you actually kind of like are in another place and are interacting with other people. And then like you say something and it could be in the same language and they can be like, what is that? You know, there's this kind of comfort to talk on your native language.
It's like Yasmin took her middle school language experience and moved the exact opposite way of Sada. She even picked up an extra one.
Right. And though it might not be easy to see off jump, these experiences with language are reflected in their artwork in huge ways, y'all.
Right. So let's switch gears just a little. Language affects Yaz's entire worldview. As we mentioned, she majored in foreign languages in college. She knows Spanish, English, French, and Italian.
Whew, that's a lot. For Yasmin, language is the key to the world, and she's trying to unlock all the doors, yo.
My favorite sign that she's all about language is how she starts her drawing process.
I know four languages, basically, and sometimes, like, the way... I don't know, it's hard to explain, man. But it's like I have a cocktail in my head, just to say it or something. So sometimes I would get these ideas and I start like writing them or something. And it just, you know, when it's like a phrase or something, it comes, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. But it's weird. It's like sometimes you're writing and then the word does not come, or like the sentence does not easily come in the language that you're writing. So it just kind of maybe pops in English or like a phrase that, you know, sometimes there's a thing that you want to say, but you don't know how to express it as well in this certain language. So it's better in this other language. And you just kind of write it like that in your notes in that other language that it's better expressed. It's really cool to like learn other languages. Like it kind of opens your mind to like their culture too, you know? So it's definitely, as a creator, is a big inspiration to tap into that. And it's like traveling, you know?
Yo, that is wild to me. She starts drawing by writing words. Like, imagine that.
Yeah, I think it just shows the depth of her understanding of language. It goes beyond the verbal, and she can get these images associated with language and untranslatable phrases that she can express through her character acting.
Knowing this languages and like kind of having like these phrases that are not like expressions that are mostly like part of that culture too, you know, sometimes like a saying of that specific place, we can't really translate it to another language, and like it's a form of like expressing yourself, and sometimes that really helps in like when you're like drawing or something, the body language and like the acting of the character helps more. I don't even know if I'm making sense with it, but to me it kind of makes sense to have like kind of those unique phrases or parts that, of a language that you can't really translate in the other, but kind of expresses something that the other can't express, and it kind of helps more in my mind with the acting of a character and like a drawing. So like I know English, Spanish, Italian, and French. I always think that kind of like Italian and Spanish are very like, oh man, I don't want to say aggressive or anything like that, but it's very like expressive. Yeah, that's like the word, expressive. Like it's very like intonation is like going up and down, and it's very expressive. And I think that's something that definitely channels in like character acting and like feeling and emotion.
Indeed. Indeed. She pays particularly close attention to faces and character expressions.
It's even reflected in her inspiration. You can tell that when she's consuming comics, she's paying attention to that character acting.
Ooh, you're right. So just like our homie, CDA, member of the crew, she's a fan of Clay Mann, especially for that expressiveness in his artwork.
I look a lot at Clay Mann because he does these amazing like angles. I look at I can't pronounce his name, at Oliver, because I like the way he does expressions. I really like how he just kind of, it just looks so lively and effortless. So I really like that about him.
So Yasmin sort of sees man's art like she sees the world.
Right. And as a sequential artist, she doesn't get to put the words on the page all the time. But that doesn't mean she doesn't get to communicate language.
Word. We eye to eye with it, bro. And pretty much every piece of art I've seen her put out is just that expressive, yo.
I think a place where she really shines is her reconstruction piece titled El Futuro Lleno de Luz, or The Future Full of Light.
Yo, good point. And while I wasn't in the editor's room, I'd like to think the way that piece came to her has a lot to do with those expressions and the character acting features that permeate her work.
Straight facts, no printers.
You know, like, it's not a Michael Bay movie. Like, not every moment has to be, you know, action or dialogue, you know, it's, you know, not everything has to move. Like, sometimes things just breathe. And I always really, really liked that in those movies where it's just softness, you know? So yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that one. So, cause I like those moments, you know, in media, whether it's comics or whether it's, you know, movies or TV and stuff, it's just softness.
So, the writer on Yaz's piece was Desiree Rodriguez, who we'll hear more from later on this season, and she's an absolute, absolute badass. I would geek out more, but I won't because of time. But she is awesomeness, y'all. Y'all just need to know that. But anyway, she wanted to create this slow Studio Ghibli-type movie effect.
Right. And to slow things down, she wrote a thing with no words.
Not a single solitary text bubble to be found.
Which made Yaz the perfect pick because she very clearly sees and communicates language beyond the words.
While it's only a couple of pages, the facial expressions and the overall expressiveness of her characters in El Futuro, goodness, amazing.
And you see it in everything she creates. The one-page comic she did for the Rock Devote thing, the artwork she's posted for Tilly, a comic she's working on with Juan Ponce. Whatever Yasmin's characters are doing, you feel it. Language is a way to see the world, and so when you're creating a world with your art, having this language makes you feel more real.
You hit the nail on the head, bro. And when we get back, we'll take a look at the flip side and walk through how Sarah interacts with Spanish and English.
Hey, what's going on, listeners? Wilson here. We'll throw it over to Lou, who has a couple holiday recommendations for y'all.
I want y'all all to consider changing how you envision Santa Claus. When I grew up, he was fat and jolly and loved cookies and milk and delivered presents, cuz. Now, he's still jolly and he delivers presents, cuz. But in these three spots I'm about to give you, Santa is also a complete badass who is strong, and he combines this level of extreme kindness with this extreme fitness and overwhelming size and overwhelming personality. So the first time I saw this happen was in the animated film Rise of the Guardians. It's a movie all about finding your center and how knowing who you are at your core gives you powers. And that movie is directed by Pete Ramsey, the same Pete Ramsey who directed Into the Spider-Verse. So if you want to see what he was doing early on before he blew up, Rise of the Guardians is it. Great holiday movie. Second recommendation is Clouds by Grant Morrison and Dan Mora. Everyone knows I'm sort of a Morrisonian comic reader. And in Klaus, Grant Morrison brings Santa into the epic mythology lens, where in addition to giving gifts and being jolly, Santa also combats spirits and wields weapons. Third, also titled Klaus, but this is that new film on Netflix with this crazy dope animation style that does away with the monomyth in a really cool way and creates Santa Claus, the man, the myth, and the legend. It has this really cool armature that says a true act of goodwill always sparks another and then goes on to prove it. So if you want a new view on Santa Claus, check these things out. They're really great. I'm going to tell my kids this is Santa Claus and have fun on the holidays.
We are back, and we're in the middle of the language wars, taking you on the inside of the experience from the other side of the battle lines.
So, in the same Reconstruction anthology, Sara also has a wordless piece. It's 2 pages, based on a memory she had with the other days of the week. One thing you'll notice, since we put you in a expression mindset, is that there's sort of an aversion to the use of faces.
Yup. As it turns out, Sarah doesn't like to draw faces that much. However, Sarah going wordless comes from an entirely different place.
For some reason, I cannot start with dialogue. I have to start, like, I don't know, when I read. Mostly, if I start reading a comic and I open a page and there is no dialogue. It's just like images, and I can like slowly used to it. It's easier for me to read the story. So I was like, I always like to start with images. When I finished writing the story, writing not in a script, but, you know, like with the sketchings and pages by page, and I kind of like analyze it, like see what would people see when they read this. It has like a little bit of the situation in Puerto Rico. Maybe nobody see it. Maybe it's just me. A little bit of me or the little bit of my worries are always going to be there anyway. So I don't have to force it. It's going to be in the story or like whenever I write this something. I stop worrying about what am I saying with the story. Let's just be fun and something will happen. Something will show up that is important.
See, Sarah got into comics at the humble age of 24 and came in by way of webcomics.
All right. So if I had to guess, I'd say it's connected to a lot of webcomics being published in English. With English being a language she's still working on, it's easier to see the pictures first and then let the pictures help inform the words.
Keen insight, fam. Sarah, like Yaz actually, got her master's at Savannah College of Arts and Design, or SCAD, and going to school in the States forced her into using her English more.
When I went to SCAD, I mean, I took a test called the TOEFL, and I could read. I could write, and write thanks to the classes. Yeah, but you have to like write essays and stuff. What I couldn't do was speaking. So when I went and I took the TOEFL and everything, and the TOEFL was right, I couldn't barely speak. When I took the test, they were like, you have short questions. Anyway, the test was about I couldn't speak it. When I went there, I couldn't barely, when the classes went there, I had to raise a hand and, what did you say? What did he say as my classmates? What I helped me a lot was like speaking, because as you can see, I like to speak. And since I found somebody, hey, you, let's talk. And that's how I think my getting better at speaking was because of that. And my English got much, much better thanks to conversations. And I could see that in the students, that other students, that their language wasn't English, their first language. The Thai ones had more problems speaking English than the ones that were like extroverts and getting everywhere and not asking everything. So that's basically my first conversation was with the taxi driver who took me from the airport to the apartment where I was going to live in. And he was very nice. I think she could barely understand me. My accent gotta be stronger, or my pronunciation should have been worse. And she was very nice. But yeah, that's basically my experience learning English.
Oh, man. That's wild. So while she was learning the ins and outs of a whole medium, she was learning a whole language in her mid to late 20s. Damn.
Yeah, those are two big things to be learning at once. Fortunately, on the language front, she loved conversation and was always willing to practice her English.
And on the sequential art front, while in a new environment, Sarah decided to focus on the environment in her artwork.
Possibly at the expense of her faces.
Everybody says, oh, faces are easy, but like drawing faces for me is like super stressful because they have to look the same in each panel. That's the process. I like environments. It's so like for me nicer because it's static. It doesn't move. It doesn't have an anatomy. So once you figure out the angle, I have a lot of fun doing, maybe I have too much fun doing details. Kind of enjoy it. And then I realized I enjoy really drawing environments and details and everything. When I have to color, that's when I'm like, damn it. Why did I do so many? Can I say that word? Why did I do so many details? Sarah, why are you like this? When I started doing my master's, I didn't know how to draw. I was a zero, basically. So I said, like, I need to focus on the things that scare me the most, which are cars, the buildings, everything that is environment. So I focus myself so much on parts of the art.
And it's real apparent when you consider the artist's style she decided to study as she developed her skills. Jorge Jimenez.
He's the guy that works on Super Sons. I liked so much when I follow his Instagram all the way that, I mean, he works on a manga studio, or how do you say, a clip studio, Paint Pro. So I work on the same program. So seeing comics being made with that program, I was like, oh, nope, I have to study this guy. I need to see what he does, what new things he can do that I don't know how to do. And actually, I found out stuff about manga, Clip Studio, that I didn't know about. So when you see his patterns and gray tones and everything, I'm like, where is this? And then I start checking the program and I found things. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So then the line work, seeing how thick the lines is around the character, but inside of the drawing is like thinner. See, I don't know if it makes any sense, everything I'm saying, but like I wanted to study how he did it on the program and also like the composition of black and whites, because my black and whites are not the best. So yeah, that's what I study, Jorge Jimenez.
So, where Yaz saw expression in Clay Mann's work, Sada saw line work, patterns, and gray tones that sort of make up the feel of a book.
Exactly. And it allows her to build her worlds from the perspective of the things in it.
Great seg, fam. Because all of this leads us to the creation of Sada's webcomic, Nightless, a story about a curse and a place where the meaning of your name has very real impacts.
The idea was that the name that you have, because in Puerto Rico or English too, you have names like Daisy and Gloria, names that will like have a meaning. So, for example, Dolores means pain, and like Daisy means flower, right? Well, the idea behind Nightless, the idea was a town when everybody turned into what their name meant. It was like a curse or something. And that's how Daisy turned into a Daisy. Dolores, which means pain, so start having a lot of pain. Pedro, which means something about rocks, is turned into a rock. So that was the idea behind the idea behind Nightless, was a curse about names. And I started like making a list of all the names that in Puerto Rico that means something different. Like even the names of characters, like, you know, Jules, Jesus is a name in Spanish, Jesus. It's a very common name. For example, Maria. So I start like all the angel, there's angels names. And I'm in the story. So when I had to write it, it's a little bit complicated to explain. Maybe someday I'll find a better, easier way to explain it. But even in Spanish, I can explain the premise that easy.
So we've got a town where you turn into the meaning of your name. So if Sakura from Naruto lived in this town, she turned into a Sakura Blossom, if I'm following along, right?
Right, right. And if Nightwing came there out of Gotham, then he would...
No, don't do it.
Mm-mm. You're right. That's a little crass. But in Nightless, the language that people do not speak is Spanish. Otherwise, they'd all have known the meaning of their name from jump, and the whole story would take place in like 5 seconds.
That's right. And that framing leads Sarah into pushing herself in a new way to write Nightless in English.
The language, I mean, for example, Nightless is going to have a lot of... Not a lot of Spanish. Hopefully it's going to be like not annoying. It's going to have a few words because the names, after all, are in Spanish. But like that's the part of the language that's there. I mean, I write them in English, in my poor English. And I don't know if I could ever write it a Nightless because of the kind of story it is. I could write it in any language except for Spanish, because the idea is that the characters forgot, or at least some of them, they don't know all the words. They don't know complete Spanish. So, because it's in English. And they do, like, that part they do. For example, like, this is a little bit complicated that I took away from the story. But, like, once the curse came, the children, like, the children that don't speak Spanish, so they couldn't, like, name everything randomly and start creating dragons and unicorns everywhere. Because you can also name animals. So that was the idea behind it. But like, I just decided to like the story, the people just like, you know, little, like, you know, a little bit of another language and you know, oh, my name is some sort of flower. And that's why I turn into a flower. I mean, if you turn into a flower, you cannot speak and whatever you'll see in the story. But like, they know. And the main characters, at least they read. I never make them like, not obviously, you will not see them reading, but they know, because since they are always searching things around the old town, they find books and everything, stuff in Spanish. So the main character, one of them, Sana, she knows Spanish, and that's how at the end of the story, she's going to use the curse in her favor to fight the evils of. They know what their names means. Some people know English, some people Spanish, some people don't. But like, since I had to write it, I wanted to everything to be in Spanish and everybody. But like, since I had to write the story in college and like during the master's degree, I didn't want it to be like just writing it without having to explain everything. So I considered, what if this is written in English, everybody speaking English, and the way they speak, like, oh my goodness, isn't like Dolores means pain, means fancy. Oh, so yeah, so that by having that like second language, it's not like Dolores, everybody knows what Dolores means. By having that barrier, I could use it to explain things whenever I needed to.
So, Sada created a world where the words quite literally become imagery and environment. And the discovery of language means access to the secrets of a world in a way.
Contrasting that with Yaz, where the language and expression is everything. And I think we see how you can create these vastly different worlds from these slightly different worldviews.
Language is more than words. It's the way we move, the way we think, and every other little way we communicate.
And in the language wars, while there is a very clear and real battle for culture, exposure to language creates winners on both sides.
And that's all we have today on Rico and Sueños. I hope that you are able to see that preservation of the Spanish language in Puerto Rico is important to the people.
Also hope you're able to see that language is a very real thing that affects how we create and consume fiction.
Shout out to Deviant Sounds, who is continually trying to step up his game to bring dope sounds to our ears. And for the non-musical soundings, we're covered by Vanessa Flores, who you can hire to help you produce your podcast if you check her out on her website at VanessaFloresAudio.com.
Also, as always, shout out to our incredible illustrator for this season's cover art, It's Immaculate. Also named Vanessa Flores, follow her on Twitter at Vanny Flores and check out her website, VanessaFloresArt.com.
You can check out Yasmin Flores Montanez at YazFM on social media and YazFMArt.com. She just did a really dope alternate cover to Marvel Action Captain Marvel number 3 in November. So if your comic shop still has a copy, scoop that up. And she's working on a few projects, including the aforementioned Tilly, which she's working on with writer Juan Ponce.
And Flores, Montanez got a lot of flower power action going on. I dig it. Yeah. But y'all can also check out Sarah at 52 Martes. That's the number 512345. You know what I'm saying? Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco. T-O, right? Martes. And the first chapter of Nightless is available for you to read right now at night-less.com.
Catch us on the bird at Poyuf Pod and engage in discussion using hashtag Poyuf and hashtag Rich in the Dreams.
We'll be on Twitter a little bit too, so follow him at Shens the Griot with the underscore after Shens, and me, not so much, but I'm out here and I do follow back, so at Word to Wilson.
Options to reach us abound. We also have a website over at Poyuf.com. That's Poyif.com. And don't forget to tell a friend. To tell a friend about us this season. That's exponential growth, y'all. And if you consider dropping some coins our way for the holiday season, you can check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/poyuf.
This has been Rico and Sueños, the inaugural season of the Power of Human Fiction podcast.
The nonfiction podcast about fiction and its very real effects on our lives.
Hasta luego.
Peace.